Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to a classic big interview. This is where we dig into the vaults and choose an episode from earlier in our shows. This time, we've gone all the way back to season 2018-19 and opted for one of our and your absolute favourites. This is what I had to say about it back then. Do enjoy. And now, a champion of England. An unlikely one, but nonetheless, somebody with a Premier League winner's medal. The interviews are coming thick and fast, but so are the matches, which is why you might hear some background noise as I record this intro. I'm standing outside the mighty Santiago Bernabeu, just ahead of commentating on Real Madrid against Getafe. Speaking of this club, this guest, Christian Fuchs of Leicester and Austria, that's his name, talks about the joy working with Real Madrid legend Raul at Schalke. Talks about the horrific experience of being bullied by his all-time hero, Dietmar Kubauer, when they worked together, initially having queued up to get his autograph, joined the same club, played together, and Kubauer went through him every day at training. A brutal lesson, but a theme that comes up again and again in the big interview. The modern game doesn't allow for treatment like that, but is it sometimes the making of a man? And finally, why Ranieri won the title at Leicester? Was it simply by making all his players feel super special? Onward, Christian Fuchs, soldiers. The big interview has had many special experiences, but to go watch Austrian football legend Christian Fuchs conducting the crowd against Valencia, because his most important part of his pre-season friendly against Valencia was the love affair with the crowd that was there. But here we are in his manor in Leicester, talking about what made you so special. Christian, welcome to the big interview, and thank you for your time also.
Thank you for the nice words. I never had a better introduction than that.
That's you ain't amazing. Heard nothing yet.
That's amazing. Christian, wait, what's coming up next?
Christian, no, what's coming up next is something, is a name of a person that almost nobody will have heard of outside Austrian or maybe Spanish football. I'd like to start with Didi Kubauer.
Yeah.
And I want to know how it is that with his atrocious behaviour towards you, he helped make you the man you are.
That's very true. So you really did your researches, huh?
Well, I remember him for Real Sociedad as being the guy who got the most bookings in the shortest space of time ever.
He was a special character. He was really special.
Strong character.
I mean, honestly, when he was my age that I am now, and I was back then, I think I was 17, 18 or so when I came into the first team of Mattersburg. It's completely different to what the setup is at the moment between young and older players. So I was literally, for the 5 years that I played for Mattersburg, I was frightened of him. Mm-hmm. Very, very frightened because of the character he is. I mean, you described it the best way, that he got the most yellow cards, most red cards, I don't know what else. He had the biggest mouth of all. He simply tried to win every single game in the training, and he made you feel that you... Well, looking back now, I think he just wanted to get the maximum out of me. But back then, I thought he just wants to humiliate me. That's how it felt. But again, it gave me that extra push, looking back now again, that probably made me do the next step after the next step after the next step, which made me the player I am, which made me, at the very beginning of my career, probably built the foundation of everything that will follow then. I mean, after going through his school, let's call it like that, I went to Germany, on to Leicester, obviously, being the Premier League, and I still believe the way he shaped me back then. I mean, there were scenes, obviously. We played a game away against Reed. Reed, nobody will know that. No. They are now in second league. And I was like, I had an impossible angle, like at the 6-yard box. And I decided to shoot instead of playing across where he was completely free. And basically he was shouting out to the manager then, why do we even need him? Why do we need him? And, you know, me being 18, 19 years old, it doesn't really feel good.
if you
can see that the captain of your team is talking to the manager and asking why we even need him. But this was only one of, say, 20, 30 of those.
But let me ask, doesn't it sting a little bit more? Because, you know, when you've been a kid, you've queued up to get his autograph, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
National team. Now, the national team didn't come play in Saltern, but where did they play?
Neunkirchen.
They come and
your pronunciation is pretty good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't it?
See, I at least I understand what you mean. It doesn't happen too often.
Compared to when I speak fast in Scottish. Okay, point taken. Touché. That's a DD experience for me you've just given. I'll grow. I'll improve my pronunciation and my language. But, like, you know, if we do anything in this podcast series, we try to speak to the listeners and we share an experience with them. Now, everybody who listens to this, everybody who works on it has, if not idolised somebody in some sport has inspired them. There's a saying in Britain and Scotland, never meet your heroes, or your heroes have feet of clay. But at that stage, when you're a kid, long before you play together, you know, he's the guy whose signature you want, and at one stage he gives it to you.
I was queuing up for 20, 25, I don't even know how long, maybe it was 45 minutes, because, like you said, the Austrian national team playing the friendly against, I don't even know anymore who it was, it doesn't really matter, but I was standing there like, Didi, straight arm, with the pen in my hand, with a piece of paper in my hand, and he was ignoring us for like 30 minutes. Finally, I got my signature still in my parents' house, hanging on the wall, I believe, and then when you play with that person that you idolize, obviously, when you're very young, when you're a teenager, it's a special honor. And again, you're probably more listening to him and you're more quiet. You just shut up when he has something to say because of the player he is playing, obviously, at Real Sociedad, I think there was.
And then
Wolfsburg, so...
Rapid Vienna successfully, too.
Yeah, of course. That was big times then.
Yeah.
That's what made everything else possible for him, I believe, so... Yeah, it was kind of a tough 5 years. Before I signed with Mattersburg back then, I was 16 when I had my first trial training with them. And obviously he was playing there, some other players, some other very experienced players with big names in Austria played there. And they were pretty rough. And again, one guy was Herfried Sabitzer. He was a tank of a striker, and he obviously knocked me over, then Didi knocked me over, and 2 minutes later, Didi was on the ground. But I just got up when they knocked me over, I got up, I was like, okay, that's what it is. I got to adjust to that. That was my attitude back then, or still is it. And I got up, and that impressed the coach back then, that I just knocked him over the same way and made him feel some pain. I only enjoyed playing football, and that was simply the way I did it. Where did it come from? I think it's just my natural.
It's natural.
I think it has something to do how you raise a child, that you don't take all the shit that people bring in towards you, that you stand your own ground. But then again, that's how I grew up, you know. For me as a kid, I didn't have a father that was a professional at some point, so everything I have or all the success that I gained in my career was all built up by honest work, by hard work, and I guess it was a good start. I see it in a very positive way because it helped me to shape my character, to stand my ground in football, which I believe is very important, and which I think nowadays it's not there anymore.
Well, you always believed, looking back, that Kubauer did it with a motive that wasn't just bullying. You retrospectively, you believe that he saw something in you that he could
and
push.
And he also told me. So that was for me the most interesting part, that when there was the Euros 2008 in Austria, I was still playing for Mattersburg, but we all knew that I would leave the club after the Euros to go into a bigger league, which was Bochum then. And literally, after the last game, he came over to me saying, I knew you're going to make it. I knew you're going to make it. So that just, right this moment, I realized what he did over the last 5 years. In those 5 years, for me, it was a tough lesson. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, okay, I got you. I understood what he was aiming for.
So the guys who are this day being coached by Didi Kubauer, don't give up if you're listening in. Stick at it. You, irrespective of like the fact that you're a smart guy, a successful businessman, you're inventive,
he
you're
really
funny,
loves
creative,
football, man.
All that, all that, and you've got a really good left foot that separates everything else you do in a football pitch. You've got something that you deliberately connect with people, especially the fans. Now, when you go Bochum and then Mainz, there are things that are interesting in what you do there. But we, like for example, Raul, where I live in Spain, I've lived there for a long time. Raul is a player who I know a little, I watched a lot of. He was a crown prince of Real Madrid. It was as if he literally was royalty within the club and out with, and he should have probably gone immediately to a coaching job and then to and be president. Right? And he left the club, and he left the club through the back door, and he wasn't particularly well treated. There was a battle of wills between him and the president. Whose club is this really? And you end up playing against him and then playing with him. And one of the iconic things that we see in studying what happened to him at Schalke is that not long before he says, I should have left earlier, this was what I needed, this changed me, and it did. There was a moment where, I think just before the winter break, where Schalke won a big game, Neuer still in goals, the fan chiefs and the players make him come to behind the goal and join the fans, in fact, get over the fence and stand with a guy with a microphone and sing and chant and lead the chant. Now, just talk to us a little bit about that. One, what I'm talking about, because you know Raul, you played with him, you watched him, what did you learn about him? But also, do you understand what I'm talking about how odd that was to see this guy from Spanish football behind the goal singing with the fans at Schalke?
I can't imagine how it feels when, like you said, you have to. He has to talk to you before you talk to him, which is a big standing that he has in Spain. But it's simply a part of the culture in Germany that players, whenever you win a game, like usually one of the outstanding players of the game is going to the fans and starting the chant. So it was. I think it was just a part of the routine, but he enjoyed it. 100%. I mean, the way I got to know him, that he was very approachable, very much of a gentleman, very nice guy. I also believe that the players that had the most success in their career, they're very modest. They are happy with what they achieved. Not saying they are resting on that, mm-hmm. because obviously you then adjust your goals, but he was a gentleman of a player, and I'm really honored that I had this joy to play with him.
Did you see anything in training, the daily work, where you know all hiding is removed for football players from each other? Did you see things on a daily basis that made you understood what he'd achieved, or did it just look normal?
It looked normal. I mean, I understand when people like, "Wow, you train with Raul, you train with Raul," but yeah, guys, that's very true. And I feel honored that I can play with him, but it's my job, you know. I go there as he goes there to work my bollocks off to play for the next game. But what I appreciate about him, I mean, you know, he didn't need to go to Schalke because he had achieved everything. But then when he was at Schalke, he was working hard every single time. It's a great mentality that he had, being obviously the player that he is, but still working as hard as he did. which was very impressive.
He always talked about himself being a self-made player. He always said, I don't have the greatest talent, and I have to work on my left foot, my right foot, my shielding, my heading.
But he had a massive talent. Seriously, in front of goal, he was lethal.
Did you find him? Was it easy to find his movement? What did you like about his movement in matches?
He was simply very smart, I think. So when he played for Schalke, he was not playing all the way up front. So
no,
he was
off the nine.
Yeah, exactly. Which made him be more of a connecting player for us. So we found him a lot of times in between the lines. He was just a connecting player between Jan-Klaas Huntelaar, who was the striker back then, and midfield and defenders. And it was simply a joy to play with him. I mean, one of the scenes, it's nothing special, but we had like the ball. We were winning the game, obviously. We had the ball about halfway line around my position, left back, and we were just playing the ball back and forth without any pressure from the opponent, like 5, 6, 7 times. And the crowd was going, hey, hey, hey. So, but just, it's something very simple, but just to have this with him makes me proud, for example, to play a couple of unnecessary passes with the Prince of Madrid, of Real Madrid, which yeah, is fun to think back.
I wish this was a visual medium right now. Because, boy, you're smiling.
Yeah, it is.
I know you smile a lot in life, but, like, the wrinkle lines along your eyes. No, well, that's a big smile.
That's age-related. You should know what I'm talking about. And I didn't find my Nivea cream so far so I can get rid of those.
When football ruined Antigua for you because you're trying to have a quiet drink on the beach and the man who signed you gets sacked.
Hey, I met him just recently.
Now?
Just recently.
Okay.
For the first time.
That's
the first time I spoke to him.
That's what I wanted to know because, you know, in your life, there are lots of little twists and turns that could be negative, being told as a youngster you're not going to make it, or the things we've already talked about, injury, whatever. And that could have been, like, a bad thing. Yet here you are these years later, champion of England, came very close to a Champions League semi-final. A business magnate with your own creative brand of design and clothes, lots of other projects. And a spark for that is Nigel Pearson phoning you.
It was a funny situation, yeah.
It was. Okay, tell it the other way around, because I've got a question to ask. You met him and
We had a pre-season fixture against Leuven. And it's the first time that I literally met him in person, and we had a chat for 5 minutes. I said, hey, thank you for signing me, even though I never worked with you, but thanks for making all that possible. And yeah, very nice guy, honestly. I mean, I don't know how it is when I work with him, but yeah, the story that we share, even though we didn't do anything together, is fantastic from my perspective.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Retrospectively, you know, although I wasn't phoning them saying sign Christian Fuchs for Leicester, it makes sense the way that you play for the style of the team and what they were building. It makes sense that their scouting identified you. We can see that retrospectively. But you've said, and I've never heard the detail of this, that when he phoned you, he didn't just not persuade you, he convinced you. The things he said sold you an idea of the project, the football. I'd like to understand what he said to you, because my proposition is that by the time he sat in your training in Austria under Ranieri, famously Ranieri says, nothing for 4 or 5 days and then goes, everything's fine. And he was giving a big tick to Pearson's plans, the very thing that he was selling you on the telephone. So how did the conversation go, first of all?
Well, that's 4 years back in time, man.
Broadly. You've got every detail, I know you do.
Well, we were talking about how he wants to play, what tactics, what style of football, what the goals are, obviously. And I mean, my goal was to play in the Premier League. And he just made me feel appreciated. He made me feel comfortable right away on the phone. I think that's one of the main things that you need as a footballer. Yeah, you need the tactics, you need the skills, you need to have all those informations, but I think the major part is about how you treat people, how you manage them, because you need to feel comfortable in order to perform on the highest level for you personally. And I felt that right away. It didn't go too much into like too many details. Obviously, we didn't work together yet. I didn't sign yet, so there was nothing there to talk about. But we spoke about philosophy, what they're aiming for, and that he really, really wants me. And the second the manager gives me that feeling, I'm all for it. And awkwardly, I never saw him. That was 3 years ago now. Awkwardly, I never saw him until 3 years later when we played, obviously, that fixture. But listen, he signed me. I'm very happy he did. Even though I never worked with him,
it was a good phone call.
It was a great 2 phone calls.
Maybe I'm overcomplicating it, but like, you know, I watched you play in the Bernabeu before you left. You know, you went there, scored in 1-4-3 against Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I don't know what you thought of him, but you were working for a Champions League winning manager on that day, Robbie Di Matteo. You famously want to get your act to Manhattan as soon as you can, but you wanted one last contract, and you signed for a team that had just escaped relegation. And therefore, I'm not saying that there's an imbalance in what you've explained, taking a risk.
But that's what Nigel Pearson told me. You know, he told me, listen, we won the Premier League now. We want to win the Premier League now. So I said, okay, sign me and we're good.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you couldn't remember the phone call a minute ago. He didn't use that phrase. He didn't use that phrase. He did.
But that's what it is. Honestly, all the truth. They needed me to win the Premier League. That's why he wanted to...
Now, we know that's true now.
No,
now we
know it's true. It's very true. I mean, that's why it is. That's why it is.
I believe you.
No, listen. Yeah, for me, it was about getting into the Premier League. Nobody could expect what happened after. But again, it
didn't feel like a risk. Like my one big throw of the dice, and I'm going to put everything on... You know, Leicester.
No, but we all know how hard it is when you get promoted to maintain Premier League status. And Leicester did it in an awkward manner, in a typical Leicester manner.
Good point.
And for me then it was like, okay, talking to my agent and explaining the situation to me as well and what the setup is in the Premier League, and that the first year is obviously always the toughest one, but then they had this run, and then for me it was like, okay, they maintain Premier League status, so they will obviously invest money to keep the status, and well, gotta say they invested the money in a very right way. So after that, we were Premier League champion. It's insane, yeah.
You're still scratching your head even when you say it.
It's insane. I mean, you're barely relegated. I mean, they showed the table, like, when was that, March or so, where the year before, Leicester was all the way down.
It's done.
The year after, they were all the
goodbye.
Way up. A point difference of, I think, 60 points or so, which is ridiculous. Come on, give me a break. It doesn't happen.
But when the owners sit down with Steve Cutner to negotiate Ranieri's deal to take over, they agree the salary and they go, okay, we like his CV, look, he's always just about, but you know, the salary is this. And then they go, so go away and think about it. And he goes away and thinks about it, talks to Claudio, phones him in Rome because he's home visiting his mum, says come over, the job's there and the salary isn't good. And then they say, okay, and then the bonus for finishing top 10, they say this, then the bonus for finishing top 5, and they're already laughing. And the agent, Steve, says, and the bonus for finishing first, and he says, write your own number. Make your own number up. That's how much the owners thought about the chances of top five, top six, top seven.
They're still happy about it, don't worry. They're still happy about it.
But they signed, like, on the basis of, this is a guy whose CV we like, even though he hasn't won many things, but he's been there or thereabouts. And what always fascinates me is you saying that the most important thing Claudio did when he came in was to watch and listen in training, in pre-season training, and not touch anything.
Yeah, it felt really good. Also, my first trainings when we... Oh, you hear the clapping?
I think it's organised by Claudio.
Yeah, of course.
This is your third birthday visit from him.
Also, my first impression when I joined the training in the camp in Austria was that this feels really good. This is really, the training intensity quality is really good, and I think that's why I said I think he did well by not changing too much, and a big bonus to him also about how he managed the players. Again, what I want to come back to what I said before, mm-hmm. that he had this personal touch and he made every player feel appreciated, which for me is a big piece in the whole puzzle of winning the Premier League then.
Like, for example, he sends you home to Manhattan and says, take some time off.
Yeah, I had a red card. Also, he was on the way out from the training ground, just about to exit the gate, and I was like, come on, I need to use this chance now to see him. I was on 5 yellow suspension.
Suspension for too many yellows.
I said to him, listen, Gaffer, I cannot play this weekend. Can I go to see my family? He's like, yeah, take 5 days off. 5 days off, came back, played, won. Fine, all good.
But that really mattered to you, like his gesture that that you weren't just an employee or a board. You were a guy.
You gotta understand, every person, is it footballer, is it anybody else? Everybody has different needs, and when you take care of those needs as much as you can, obviously not everything is possible. I mean, I would love to live there and still play here and just come for the games and train over there. It's not possible, but I think the second you see that the manager is looking after you and is trying everything in his power to make it possible for you to see your family or come after your needs, that you appreciate and you give back more, you're willing to give back more.
When you won the title, I put it to you, Christian Fuchs, that a huge part of the build and the atmosphere and the momentum owed to people like you, but you particularly in this interview in relationship with the crowd, that you were somebody who naturally connects with the crowd, and that how you react or your smile or a fist bump or whatever, it's a part of the special thing that happened at 5,000-1 or 50,000-1 or whatever it is. You knew that was important during the push for the title, within the dressing room with your teammates and with the fans as well?
I just had fun. I didn't know we were going to win the title. Come on, I didn't even expect winning the title when we were in Jamie's house and Tottenham was playing Chelsea. I didn't expect it even then. You know, for me, Tottenham was all the time the favorite to win the title. And I'm very honest about that, very honest. But then when it happened, come on, happy days. Seriously, I was wishing for Chelsea to win or to draw or take away points from Tottenham, of course. I mean, it makes me Premier League champion. But up until then, I mean, this was... I quoted it already several times, but I think it just describes this evening at Vardy's house the best, that it was the toughest 90 minutes I've never played. So I was... The next day, I was completely tired. Hmm. It was just constant tension.
Nervous energy.
Very nervous. Sitting, standing, laying, I don't know, sitting on the floor, running around, walking. I couldn't find a position to watch the game because it meant everything to us. I mean, this could be the 90 minutes that crown us Premier League champion, and obviously it did.
But as the game went on, you could see Spurs tiring, I'm sure.
I can see them getting rough.
Yeah.
They were disappointed, they were frustrated. Yeah. Where I was like, that could be it. 10 minutes to go. Hazard scoring, Hawk. I want to kiss his feet.
Did you ever kiss his boots?
I told him I want to, but we never made it. I really told him when we then I had the last game at Chelsea. I told him after the game or whenever, I want to kiss your boots, but it didn't work out.
He's a listener, so I'll maybe get him to send some boots.
They were, you know, I don't like to kiss. I think he's on Nike. I don't like to kiss.
Bonus time. Yeah, but okay, then the atmosphere then, you don't retrospectively think that, you know, the way that you connected with the crowd, not just you, maybe everybody, certainly Ranieri, that was an element in the triumph when you look back on it? Because the
could be.
The noise, the conviction that I watched at Simeone's Atleti when they win the title in 2014, which isn't as strange as Leicester, but often I wrote about with no mistypes. It's almost certain.
Okay.
Ish. It's almost impossible to see a club where the president, the staff, the players, the media who support them, and the fans are all singing the same, believing the same mentality, urging each other on, bringing the best out of each other. When you see that, it's really powerful. Big clubs, huge clubs don't need that. They need to get the signing policy right. The coach-player relationship has to be good.
Yeah.
Because they've got such a big budget and big talent, they don't need that same thing. If the fans applaud, it's good. But Leicester and Simeone's Atleti, it felt like everything was together, and the relationship between the players in the dressing room, the fun or the jokes or the videos or whatever, but also the way that the fans felt that you were, like, for example, we invest our personal identities in the teams we support, but then when they give you something back, not a title, but they notice that you're there, or they do something that connects with you, the fans become a weapon.
I believe,
right or wrong?
Right, absolutely right. You answered your own question already.
But you felt a part, you looking back, that was important?
I believe so, yeah. Like I said, there are so many, I mean, football is so versatile. There are so many different factors, so many different puzzle pieces that you got to put together to get the greater picture. But I think everything that supports the group, the atmosphere, is important. And, yeah, man, the videos that I did, the fun that I had with my teammates, I believe it was a part of that, even if it's a small part. Mm-hmm. But the small things can change a lot.
It counts. How did that atmosphere, or the King Power atmosphere in the really big games, compare to winning Ruhr derbies, for example, which I think was your competitive debut for Schalke, mm-hmm. to win one where the two clubs, you know, they don't like each other.
Not really, no.
Dortmund is of the two, I hate to say it to your face, maybe a little bit more successful and bigger.
Yeah, it is.
But like,
you have the bigger stadium.
One time I did TV work on the pitch at Auf Schalke with the roof closed.
For me, Schalke is the best stadium in Germany. It's by far. Very modern, very cool, very nice.
And the fans? I'm comparing your relationship with the Leicester fans, maybe your relationship with the Schalke fans, but also the mentality. They feel like they're the 12th man as well.
It's their life. It's their life. They spend definitely a quarter of their annual salary on tickets and on merch and whatever. So I understand that they're very demanding, very critical, but they give everything for the club, everything. And the atmosphere, obviously, in Germany is different compared to the English atmosphere. It's maybe a lot more aggressive, but a lot louder.
Yeah,
it is. Well, I gotta say that our fans and the King Power, obviously with the clappers that we have, is also different to most of the stadiums in England. Much louder, I believe. Positive, which is very vital for us players, because with negative energy, even if something doesn't work out, we also had this in the last seasons, then you don't need anybody booing at you. You know already that you're shit. Mm-hmm. You know already that you're not doing it, that you're not performing well enough. But then you need the support, and then you don't need the boos or the whistling or whatever. It doesn't help you. It doesn't help the whole situations. We're all trying to be successful as team, fans, players. Then you got to support each other, and you feel that support from the stands.
So sometimes it'll carry you through a tough spot, the intense support you might get out of Schalke or King Power.
And
those memories, because you consistently beat Klopp's side, not just in the Super Cup but also in the league, 1-0, 2-1. There was quite a lot of victories while you were there. Just describe that rivalry and whether you did or didn't enjoy that, because it seems to me perfect for you.
The best win we had against Dortmund was away at Dortmund. That is magnificent. That simply tops everything. We were winning 2-0 away. You're in a stadium, 85,000 people, 5,000 of your own team, 80,000 all against you. Everybody's whistling at you. Obviously, when you get out after the game, they were quiet.
It's a good feeling.
It was such. And that particular game, all our fans, they had like white hats on. Don't tell me what reason, but they all were wearing white hats.
So against a wall of yellow and black, you could see the white hat guys are our guys.
Exactly.
Well, it was nice to be able to celebrate with them. Yes. You've got, so Klopp's over here. You like what he does with the fan culture at Liverpool, but you didn't work for him. You worked for Tuchel, though.
Tuchel, yeah.
And Mainz.
Yeah.
Not a huge amount of experience with him, but still.
It was the most impactful experience in my career.
Because?
Knowledge.
Uh-huh.
Football knowledge. One of the best, if not the best, manager I worked with in terms of tactics, knowledge, how to prepare for teams. You know, he made you feel like we could beat anybody, and we did.
If you finished fifth under him, right? From Mainz,
yeah.
That's something.
It's like we're in the Premier League with Leicester.
It is,
and it felt very similar.
You mean ideas and atmosphere and team spirit?
Exactly. So yeah, that was a very impactful year for me as a player for Mainz that year. He shaped the left defender, Christian Fuchs.
Hmm.
Where before I was left defender, which was okay, but he got me a couple more steps further up the line.
More strategic knowledge, more liberty,
yeah,
to go forward.
Both, all of that.
Because he likes his team to be in charge of the game, offensive,
exactly.
Have the ball, and not use it vertically, but use it aggressively to win.
Yeah, yeah. Always pressing, always defending on the front foot.
Yeah.
Guiding the game, knowing what every teammate does at every second of the game. It was being brave, like I said, defending on the front foot.
It's potentially exciting if you mix the talents he's got at Paris Saint-Germain with his age, energy, ability, mentality now.
Very interesting to see, yeah.
Did the Premier League miss out in not signing him when he was free?
I would say so.
Christian Fuchs, pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for being so generous.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.